the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and I don't know if you've been noticing lately, but the markets, after 2 years of relative stability, well, volatility is back, and everything has fallen sharply. Stocks, bonds, price of oil. Now, the question that you're probably asking yourself, and if you haven't been asking yourself, you should be asking yourself, what does this all mean? Is this just a passing storm, some kind of a correction, or is there something more serious going on here, which might look like a new bear market forming? If this is the new bear market, which we have been talking about for some time here on the show, are you prepared? So let's find out the answer to the first question, Jim. What is behind the sudden earthquake in the financial markets, and how long enduring do we expect it to be?
You know, John, I would attribute this to more to a passing storm or squall, but there's something that's behind it. And that is a paradigm shift and a transitioning to what I call the final phase of this bull market and the latter stages of a business cycle. Now, the biggest shift we've been seeing is what I believe is the beginning phase of a new bear market in bonds. And John, what is remarkable about that, and we talked about this on the show over the weekend, is we have not seen anything like this in 36 years. I began my investment career at the peak of the final phase of the bear market in bonds in the 1980 and 1981 period, when interest rates rose to almost 16% on treasuries. Hard to believe what that would do to the markets today if it ever got that high. But interest on treasuries have bottomed last fall, and that's something that has been rising. They started to pick up in September. They rose into the end of the year. We had the Fed raise rates in December, and they've been going up ever since. So part of this shakeup that we're seeing both in stocks and bonds is the stock market adjusting to this new paradigm, but also I think it's a new bear market beginning for bonds. Bear markets and bear bull markets are long trending secular phases that can last anywhere from 25 to, in this case, 36 years. But if we take a look at interest on treasuries, which bottomed, are now close to approaching 3%. And it's a result of a number of things. Inflation is picking up. Oil is picking up. The dollar has been falling. In fact, you can lay a graph of falling bond prices right over falling dollar, and they match. So rates are rising globally, and it's not just here. It's on sovereigns. You can see it in Europe, where at one time almost a third of the bonds issued in Europe were at negative interest rates. That is changing. And even corporate debt, which means bond investors are losing money.
You know, and Jim, they're not used to that, because if you were invested in bonds for, you know, almost a decade, for the last 9 years, you pretty much held your own, and you had a pretty good flow of income that you could take to the bank.
Well, I mean, you know, let me give you an example. Let's take two popular ETFs. One is TLT, which is 20-year treasuries, and the other one is LQD, which is high-quality corporates. Now, since January, LQD is down 3.3%. TLT is down 6.3%. So I believe this is probably just the beginning as interest rates rise further as a result of several factors. Number one, we're in the midst of a Fed rate raising cycle. Number two, we are seeing rising deficits, and this new budget bill that was put together in the Senate increases spending over 2 years by an additional $300 billion. So, John, in the next 2 years, you could see U.S. deficits get back up over $1 trillion, something we haven't seen since 2010 and 2011. A third factor is a falling dollar, and four is rising inflation.
If we say that there are oncoming storms, how do you prepare for them other than diversification? But even, you know, if you look at it, that doesn't seem to be working, with stocks and bonds both down, with bonds being a little further down than stocks.
In contrast, if you own individual bonds, and especially those with shorter maturities, they tend to fluctuate less as interest rates rise. Or let's say you could own a shorter term bond fund. And the nice thing about owning individual bonds, and which is what you really need to do in a bond bear market with rising interest rates that could last several decades. I mean, the last one, bear market, started in the 60s and it lasted all the way to 1981. So it occurred over several decades. But when you own an individual bond, let's say I own a five-year bond, when that bond matures in 5 years, I get my money back. The interest rate doesn't change. I get my income. I hold it to maturity. At maturity, it basically gives me back all my capital, and I can then reinvest it at a higher interest rate. And that's something that you want to do, is you want to have a laddered bond portfolio. Or another way is you want to stay in short-term bond funds as interest rates rise, because you're less likely to lose as much capital.
Are there any other strategies that you've used to protect yourself in this type of an environment?
Two other strategies we use for our clients, John, are interest rate floaters, or what you might think of as adjustable bonds. You know, just like an adjustable rate mortgage, adjustable bonds adjust quarterly to the prevailing interest rate. So let's say the Fed raised interest rates in December. Quarterly, a bond, let's say in March, would raise interest rates to reflect the rise in the Fed funds rate. And so just like adjustable rate mortgage adjust upward or downward, adjustable rate floaters or interest rate floaters do the same thing. So that's another strategy we use. And the other one is active bond fund managers who adjust the portfolio to protect capital with either changing the duration, meaning shortening the maturity overall of the portfolio. They'll use credit default swaps. If credit spreads start to widen, they'll use puts. And what they're trying to do is keep capital, or trying to protect it as much as they can in an environment that has turned hostile. And so you want to be active. And that's something that, you know, I think investors have been very passive over the last couple of years. And, you know, you've been able to do that. I don't care if you're an S&P 500 fund, the stock market went up ever since Trump got elected. Same thing with if you were in bonds. There was very little volatility. And up until recently, John, we haven't experienced anything more than a 2% correction. We're well over 10 now.
What about the investment in bonds? Because most of the investors that invest in bonds are retirees, and they're looking for an income stream from those.
Well, I mean, laddered bonds, interest rate floaters, active bond managers all produce income. If you're in a actively managed bond fund, you know, you're going to get monthly income just like you would in a regular bond fund. And you may even see it go up depending on what that bond fund manager is doing. If you have a laddered bond portfolio, and let's say I buy a five-year bond paying 4%, or like some of our interest rate floaters that are close to 5%, I am going to get that interest. That is not going to change. But more importantly, I'm going to keep my capital from fluctuating or going through a major downturn. And so this is one of the reasons we prefer, you know, three different strategies in a rising interest rate environment or a new bond bear market. One is laddered bonds, because as you, let's say you have a portfolio of bonds, 10, 15 different bonds, and you have some maturing in 2 years, some in 3, 5, and 10 years, as those bonds roll over, you get your money back and you can invest it at a higher interest rate. Interest rate floaters work very well in a rising interest rate environment, because you capture the increase in interest rates, which keeps your capital intact and allows you to get higher income. And likewise, when you're using active bond managers who are going to protect that capital, change the strategy, whether it's shortening bonds, doing credit default swaps, puts, whatever it is to protect capital, depending on the dynamics of the bond market. So there are a number of strategies that you can do to protect.
So given the situation that we're in, you've identified here three strategies that you can use in the area of bonds to protect yourself. One would be laddered bonds. The second is active bond managers. And the third, adjustable rate bonds. All right, that's bonds. Shove that aside. What about the stock market now? Are we moving into a bear market in stocks? And if so, what steps do you have to take on that side of the equation?
As I look at this, I think what we are going through here is really a paradigm shift, one that is shifting to a period of rising interest rates and inflation and a falling dollar. We've seen this happen since fall. As I mentioned, bonds started to decline last September, along with the dollar. And you're also seeing an uptick in inflation. So we're following that sequence of market tops that we talk so much on the weekend programs, where bonds peak first, stocks peak second, and commodities peak last. So stocks, in my estimate, have further to go, as do commodities. But at this stage, the market leadership within the market is about to change towards a cyclical and an inflationary bent. I mean, you're seeing it. You've seen the price of oil rise, even though it's pulling back here. You're seeing commodity prices are rising. Oil, gold are two good examples of that. And we're following the topping script, which is why we're rotating stocks within our client portfolios and preparing for the next leg up. Because as you go through each phase of the business cycle, and there's three of them, and at each phase, you see a different leadership emerge in that phase. We, in our estimate, are in the final phase of this economic expansion, which is now 9 years, and we may see the longest economic expansion in history, along with the longest bull market in history. So that's where we are now. And at each phase, John, you're going to see a different rotation in market leadership, as many of our technicians have noted. And I think what you're seeing now, as volatility has returned to the investment climate, in a volatile market like today, you need to be actively managing your portfolio. I mean, the good news is your income should remain stable, and in fact, rise as interest rates begin to rise. You know, you take a look at adjustable bonds, which adjust up as interest rates are rising. And as we've gotten a message from the new Fed chairman and many Fed governors recently, they see no reason, due to market volatility, that they're going to refrain from raising rates along their targeted path of 3 rate hikes this year. What does that mean if you're in adjustable rate bonds? It means every time the Fed raises interest rates, those bonds will automatically adjust upward at a higher interest rate. So not only are you getting more income, but you're also protecting your capital. Because the only reason bonds decline, like let's say a bond fund, is if I have a 20-year bond that's paying 3% and bonds go to 4%, it's going to drive the value of that bond down. So the current yield on a discounted price is yielding the same as a new bond that is paying 4%. So that's something that I think is very, very important. And it's one reason we are active managers and why we employ multiple strategies to create predictable income, but more importantly, protect capital.
You've talked a lot before about blue chip stocks, Jim, and they've raised dividends. What if you're an individual stockholder?
If you're in individual stocks, you own high quality blue chips, and you are diversified, meaning that you don't have everything in stocks, you have a nice big cash balance, and you have individual bonds, then if you're relying on those stocks for dividends, you sit back and you hold them. Maybe, you know, you might want to pare back. You know, if you own 300 shares of a blue chip stock, maybe you sell 100 shares to free up some capital and build up your cash reserves. But, you know, most people that get into dividend paying stocks will sit there and hold them because they're depending on those dividends to live on. And the nice thing about these dividend paying stocks is those dividends go up, which makes it much easier to ride out, let's say, a storm.
You know, I remember, Jim, last year, one of your themes was that there was a bubble building in index funds and ETFs. Now, is that still the case? And is some of what we're seeing now part of that process, I guess, is what I'm asking?
You know, we have covered that topic, and in my opinion, it is a bubble. And just as when money flows into an index fund, they go out and buy the largest stocks in those index, it's the same thing in reverse. And it's one of the reasons why you've seen a lot of these big cap stocks fall so much as they have, and especially the big larger caps, is because they represent a larger weighting within the index. So just as when the money was flowing into an index fund and they had to go out and buy those stocks depending on the weighting in the index, the same thing happens when there's selling of an index fund or ETF. Because what they have to do is if Amazon represents 3% of the index, they're going to sell. If they get $100 worth of liquidations, they're going to sell $3 of Amazon. So that's why you see some of these bigger stocks fall a lot more. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. It is very typical of what happens when ETFs in bond funds get liquidations. You know, just as they help to drive the market on the upside, they also help to drive the market on the downside.
Let's get back to bonds, Jim, because that's where a lot of listeners are invested right now. If we are in a bear bond market, how serious is this going to be, and what kind of attention needs to be paid to that for people invested in it?
Well, you know, once again, I'm going to stay with two popular ETFs. They're one of the two largest ones. One is TLT. And a good example, in 2009, TLT lost almost 28% of its value. Think of what was going on back in 2009. In 2013, during the taper tantrum, TLT lost 21%. So, John, it is double-digit losses in these funds. And fortunately for bond investors, after the taper tantrum, interest rates went down further as QE began in Europe and Japan and driving those interest rates into negative territory. So a lot of that money from Europe institutionally and then also from Japan came into our market, keeping a cap on interest rates. So interest rates went down and bond investors recouped, maybe not completely from where they were in, let's say, 2009, but those bond funds did come back. Unfortunately, when you head into a bear market, these are secular markets that can last decades. Once again, the last one we had began in the 60s and didn't end until August of 1981. So imagine if you're in a bond fund and you're seeing your bonds or your bond fund shares decline every single year. And that is something you really want to avoid. And John, this can happen again. I mean, bear markets and bull markets are part of the market cycle, just like the seasons that we go through in weather. And it's been so long, 36 years since we have had or experienced an actual period of rising interest rates in a bond market. Most people don't know what it looks like, and they don't know what it's like when you can lose large amounts of capital. When I got in this business in 1981 and 80, we used to call bonds certificates of confiscation. And that's why when you get into this kind of a period of time in a bond bear market, you need to use a different strategy. Laddered bonds, interest rate floaters, and active fund managers. You can't sit back passively, because what you're going to do is just experience losses, and you don't want to get it to the point where, as many investors do, well, gosh, I'm down 10%, it'll come back, so you don't sell. Then the next thing you know, you're down 20%. And then you say, I don't want to sell here, I'm going to take a loss. And then finally, you're down 30%, and you capitulate, and then you dump, which is probably close to the bottom. You don't want to find yourself in that situation again.
You know, the other issue at stake here, as I see it, is that most retirees are invested in ETFs and mutual funds, and they use those. They take systematic withdrawals from those. If we get into a severe bear market, you can see where this is going to cause them serious problems.
Well, absolutely. A lot of people are on a systematic withdrawal system. And let's just make this easy. Let's say you had 100,000, you're at a 4% withdrawal rate, meaning you're taking out 4% of your capital each year. And so typically what will happen, since interest rates aren't at 4%, you will liquidate shares. And so you liquidate those shares. Well, imagine what it's like liquidating shares when your shares are going down 10, 15% a year, or over 20%, as they did in, let's say, 2009, when, for example, TLT lost 28%. Can you imagine what it's like when you're taking money to live on and you're liquidating your shares, whether it's a S&P 500 fund or it's a bond fund, and those shares are going down because of what's occurring in the market, and you're liquidating every single month at a lower price? You can eat into principal very, very quickly. And that's why we have talked about sequence risk here on the program, where you do not want to go through a severe bear market at the beginning of your retirement, because it could be devastating. Imagine losing 30, 40, or in the case of the bear market in 2007 and 9, the S&P 500 lost 58%. and bonds lost a lot of money as well. So you do not want to experience that, which is one reason I think there's going to be a big, rude wake-up call here about this passive index fad that is very popular. They become very popular in bull markets. That popularity wanes and then goes away when you're in a bear market, which is, I think, what we're heading for in bonds here.
Well, I know you invest in individual stocks, and obviously, Jim, if you're in a bear market, you're not just going to sell everything simultaneously because you try to time what you're doing and then move everything into cash. So what do you do now as far as stocks?
Well, in stocks, you know, what we're doing right now is we're rotating out of sectors because we're in a different phase of the market cycle right now. And I think you're going to see out of this correction, you're going to see a new emergence of new kind of leadership that's going to be more inflationary, materials, energy, something that Craig Johnson talked about on the program this last weekend. And the other thing, too, is if you own some quality stocks, maybe, you know, if you own 300 shares, you sell 100 shares and raise your cash. The nice thing about individual stocks. Let's say if you're just living off the dividends, let's take two examples like Coca-Cola, which is a widely held stock. Coca-Cola went down by over a third during the severe bear market of 2007 and 2009. But during that period, they maintained their dividend and they raised that dividend 7% a year. So if you're living on the dividends, those dividends you're going to get, that's not going to be interrupted. It's not going to change. And it's more likely if they have a dividend paying history of raising those dividends like Coca-Cola, you're going to see your dividends go up. And that's exactly what Coke did. They raised their dividend in 2007. They raised it again in 2008. They raised it again in 2009. So even though the shares went down by almost a third, which was far less than what the general market did because of its blue chip status and being a consumer staple. But during that period of time, the income from Coca-Cola, the dividends were raised by almost 24% during that period of time. So during the downturn, you actually got a pay increase. And the other thing, too, is during a downturn, if you're in individual bonds and you have a laddered bond portfolio and rates are rising, as when the Fed began raising interest rates in 2004, as those bonds mature, you roll those bonds over into a higher paying bond because interest rates have risen. And so it's a nice way to protect your capital. But John, we're heading into a more volatile period of time where I believe we've begun a new bear market in bonds that could last decades. And especially now when you take a look at what's going to happen to government deficits, because it's not too short in the next couple of years, we're going to be back up to $1 trillion deficits again in a falling dollar, which is a prescription for bond market losses. And eventually we could see a severe bear market in stocks emerge, but not yet.
And as we summarize all of this up, we are in a paradigm shift, which is occurring in the markets. We've begun a new bear market in bonds. So you want to protect yourself against volatility and bear markets. You must be an active manager. And if you're in stocks, in individual stocks, that you want to adjust that coincide with the current phase of the business cycle. Tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest will be Alicia Minnell, and the topic is her book, Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis, and What to Do About It. That's tomorrow right here on Lifetime Income. But in the meanwhile, time for our real-life case study, which, of course, is an hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples of the subjects Jim and I have been discussing today. Remember that names and circumstances have been changed to protect privacy, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points being made. Okay, what are we doing today?
Okay, this is the case of Ed and Lisa Walker. Ed is age 53. Lisa's age 55. Both are working, and they plan to work till at least age 65 or 66. Life expectancy for both of them is age 90. They're moderately aggressive. Their primary focus is on growth for retirement, given their ages, because at least in Ed's case, that's probably 13, 14 years away. So there's still plenty of time to put money aside. So at this point in their life, they want to go for growth, which is what most people do when they're younger. You can ride out the fluctuations of these stock market storms, the one that we're undergoing recently. Give you a little background. Ed is a program manager. He's an experienced investor. He's always taken a proactive approach to his finances. However, Ed was diagnosed with melanoma stage 2 cancer just about 6 months after completing his financial plan. His wife, Lisa, is a school teacher. She's returned to teaching and is now concerned about retirement and also wants to make sure that each of their 3 boys graduate from college. Some of the things that we were looking for that were priorities in this plan was actually putting money aside for expenses for college. And she, Lisa, liked my idea of the 2+2 plan where you spend 2 years in a junior college where you could probably graduate for maybe $4,000 or $5,000 and then 2 years at a state university. So that was something that we were looking at that reduced the amount they thought they had to put aside for a college education. Because I don't need to tell you, you know, you go to a local university, room and board, that's at least over $20,000 a year. 4 years, that's $80,000. You know, multiply times 3 children, that's $250,000. And so the 2+2 plan was basically what we proposed to them, which would reduce the funding for that college education and yet allow those children to have a college education. But, you know, they were going to have to go to a junior college where the cost would be much cheaper and then get a working job in the next 2 years when they go to, let's say, a state university. Legacy planning and estate plan was also important. And then once again, saving for retirement. Their essential budget was about $135,000. About 30 of that came for discretionary. Ed's salary was a little over $100,000. Lisa's salary as a teacher was $56,000. So they had $24,000 surplus. So that enabled them to put money aside, not only for their own retirement plans, but also to put money aside for all 3 of their children's education. Now, looking at their assets, their primary residence was $345,000. Taxable accounts, they had roughly about $160,000. Ed's retirement, a little over $365,000. Lisa's retirement in a 403B was about $81,000. So total investment assets of $604,000. Total assets of almost close to $1 million. Liabilities, mainly on the home, $134,000. Now, what we did and what was really helping that surplus that I talked about is Lisa went back to work after being out of work for 20 years, raising all 3 children. She's now a teacher and is contributing to a pension, her own, but also enabling them to bring that extra income that allows them to save not only for their children, but also for their own retirement. All assets were in their retirement accounts, which have major tax implications down the road. The estate plan needed to be updated, and especially with Ed's diagnosis with cancer. The outcome is very favorable, but you never know. Sometimes cancer comes back. So that's something that we had to put in there. And there was no sort of disability insurance for Ed, which presents a serious threat to their retirement, because once again, Ed accounted for over $100,000 of their $160,000 a year income. So we took a look at Ed's pension would be $8,000 a year. Combined Social Security would be $43,700. And there would be an additional income, depending on how long Lisa worked, there would be a pension for her as well, which would be almost 60% of her salary at the time of her retirement. We invested the income in mainly growth type assets because that's what they wanted at this stage. Total investment income would be $19,000. Grand total, $71,000 less a budget of $64,000. They would have a surplus of $7,000. Now, one of the things that we wanted to do and we suggested is much as possible, because even though the health questionnaire said they'd both are likely to live to age 90, when any time somebody's diagnosed with cancer, you never know if it comes back. So we suggested that Ed, as long as he's healthy, delay receiving his Social Security to age 70. We also recommended that he sign up for a disability insurance program through his employer, which he would be eligible for, and maximize contributions to their HSA since Ed's employer had a high deductible medical plan. We also recommended to reduce discretionary expenses at retirement, and the 2+2 plan for their college education, and we wanted to also update their estate plan. And especially now, with Ed's diagnosis, it's really important that things were put in place should things turn out for the worst part of this. We also increased their cash position, and we began to use an HSA, and Ed applied for his disability with his company, and we wanted to make sure that there was a strong support system. Anyway, the doctors at this point say the prognosis, it looks pretty good, and so we are hopeful on this outcome.
And again, tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is Alicia Minnell, Falling Short, the Coming Retirement Crisis, and What to Do. Well, things have changed rather radically in the markets in the last couple of weeks, Jim. We seem to be moving into a different direction. What do we see in the weeks to come here on Lifetime Income?
Lifetime Income, we're going to be talking a little bit more about taxes because we are in the midst of tax season. So I have more to say about that. And of course, if these volatile markets continue here in the short term, we'll be talking more about that. We addressed the issue of bonds this week, and the previous week we talked about municipal bonds and the state of the states. We're going to be talking more and more about protecting capital because remember sequence risk. You never want to go through a bear market at the beginning of your retirement. And John, I think a lot of people are a little gun shy, but I don't think a lot of people are prepared for the next downturn. And we want to make sure that people don't get caught by surprise and they are monitoring and being active with their portfolios, whether you're in bond funds or index funds. This is not the time to be passive and sit on the sidelines. So all of that in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.